Hi, I'm Gary Bauman from Check In Asia.
And I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson.
And this is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are, and thank you for listening in. We're recording this in Kuala Lumpur, the capital of Malaysia, the city in which we both live and work.
Yes, it's a beautiful sunny day. It's rainy season, so we may get a crack of thunder in a while. And we have a fine view over the city. So let's get started. This is our very own podcast.
So we've decided for our pilot show, we're going to interview each other and give you a flavour of who we are, what we've done, and why we're both so passionate about travel and tourism in Southeast Asia. And I'm going to kick things off, put Gary in the interview chat with my first question. So Gary, one of your first jobs in travel was writing travel guides in Central America. How did you get that gig?
Well, that's a good question. My background before I worked in Central America is I worked in publishing. I grew up in the city of Oxford, which is a publishing city. I'd always wanted to be a writer. I was always wanted to be a journalist. And in those days, it was quite difficult to get into travel writing.
So those days?
Yeah, we're going back. We're going back quite a long way. Yeah. So we're going back to the mid-1990s, let's be fair.
Okay.
And it was difficult to get a job. I didn't work for any of the newspapers or the travel magazines. So I submitted articles to some of the free magazines that used to be distributed around metro stations in London. And I developed a bit of a portfolio. And I'd been to Central America. I'd spent a year traveling around Central America. So I just applied to Rough Guides just to see on the off chance if they had any job offerings.
Yeah.
And they did. They'd written the Rough Guide to Central America. They were doing the second edition, and they needed somebody to research the areas of Nicaragua and El Salvador. And they said, "Do you want to do it?" So, yeah, that's basically how it started. And at that time, they also were producing a sub-guide to that called the Rough Guide to the Maya World. So I had to do a little bit of work in Guatemala and the border with El Salvador as well. But yeah, that's basically how it started.
Wow, it's like a dream job, I think, for
you. It really was. It was my first chance to get into travel writing, travel researching, and I learned a hell of a lot. It's not easy. It's hard work, and but you know, you're traveling around countries that are a long way away. They're hot. They're beautiful. The cultures are so different.
Yeah,
it was a great experience, and from there, that really helped me sort of develop my contacts, develop my portfolio a bit more, and that's really how I got into sort of the travel writing and the travel production side.
Yeah, and so after that then, I guess you were back in the UK for a little while, is that right?
I did. I lived in London for a few years and worked in different publishing areas, but I was always submitting articles, I was always traveling quite a lot, so that, you know, that gave me opportunities to write and photograph. So yeah, and then I worked for a travel publishing company. I was the editorial director there for a while. And that led me to the United States. They worked for the American Society of Travel Agents. They had a contract with them to publish their annual directories and to relaunch a magazine for them.
Yeah, and you were there around the kind of time of 9/11.
It was just after 9/11. Mm. So basically, after 9/11, the American Society of Travel Agents, or ASTA, was really trying to encourage Americans to travel overseas again, because they really weren't. They were only really taking cruises around the Caribbean, going up to Alaska and traveling domestically.
Yeah.
And obviously at that time, you know, this was pre-China really in many ways, the American travel industry was so big, it's a powerful global player.
Yeah.
And destinations around the world really wanted to entice American travelers to come back. So yeah, I worked with ASTA for 2 years. We traveled around the US, meeting newspapers, meeting local travel agents, local travel authorities, and just trying to find new ways to encourage Americans to travel again. But this really was in the very early days of the internet. So it was very print-based. So a lot of the advertising, a lot of the writing, a lot of the content that was produced in those days was either done in print or was done through radio and TV.
Okay.
So it was a little bit more difficult, I guess, but also the channels were very defined. So you could always find who it was that you needed to speak to and how they would publish it.
Yeah, not like today.
Not like today, no, where it's so fragmented.
So you were just mentioning China. So in 2004, you decided to move to China. Other side of the world, what on earth was your motivation for that? Because I can imagine back in 2004, not many people probably thought that was maybe a positive career move or I don't know, the normal thing to do.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It was a little bit out of the blue, and actually it was a little bit out of my hands. When I was working for Asta still at the time, I was working on it as a freelance contract for them, and they were going to be producing their annual travel congress in Hong Kong. So there was a little bit of a China connection. Mm. But the reason I actually moved to China wasn't for me. My ex-wife worked for an international consulting company. Uh-huh. And she was seconded to Shanghai initially for 2 years. Mm. And she said, well, you know, should we do it? And at that time, you know, that was such an interesting time to move to China. Everything was changing. Sort of global light had just been switched on. Everybody was interested in the developments that were happening there.
For sure.
So I didn't have a job to go to, but I kind of felt sure that, you know, things were going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think you were probably right. I think we can say 15 years on. Yeah, it was probably the right move to go to China.
But it was an interesting time because it was just after SARS. So the travel industry there was, obviously the domestic travel industry was nowhere near as developed as it is now.
Yeah.
The inbound market had really been hit by SARS. And at that time, a lot of international hotel chains had built brand new spanking hotels and they were empty. So it really was building from the ground up. So at that time, as I was watching and experiencing this, it was a very interesting time for the Chinese travel sector.
Yeah. So you were there for about 6.5 years. Then you decided to make the jump, go to Southeast Asia. What was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, well, the 7 years, nearly 7 years that I lived in China, so much had changed, so much had developed. And I'd set up an agency based in Shanghai, and I co-founded an agency that was based in Shanghai and Hong Kong. And we worked with a lot of travel partners, we were with a lot of hotel groups, airlines, people that were involved very closely in what was happening in the Chinese travel sector. Mm. And it was very, very clear at that time that obviously Southeast Asia was very closely aligned to the Chinese travel sector. Many of the Southeast Asian nations were the first to achieve approved destination status from China. So the travel flows were starting to begin. And so too were the investment flows. You know, Chinese companies were starting to invest a little bit more in the region. So it was quite clear that a lot was going to happen here. During the time in China, you know, so much had happened that it really changed the way that Chinese people perceived travel and the outside world, the Olympics, the Shanghai World Expo. You know, these were really, really important events in actually encouraging people to go and see the rest of the world. Airlines were opening up new routes. Mm. There were more options than there ever had been before.
Yeah.
So at that time, you know, China had really, really changed. And I just felt that Southeast Asia was really coming into its own. It was in the early days, but it seemed that coming out this way was an interesting thing to do.
Yeah. And so what did you find, kind of anything surprising when you were comparing China's travel scene with Southeast Asia's travel scene when you first arrived here?
I think the difference was just how fast China had grown. And we're seeing now, so I moved here, I moved to Kuala Lumpur in 2010. That's nearly 9 years ago. Mm. And what we're seeing now, a lot of the changes and developments we see, not just in travel, but in retail, lifestyle, banking, finance, you know, a lot of these changes that we're experiencing in the region now have come from China. That they are inspired by what happened, particularly mobile payments, e-commerce, and the super apps. You know, these were built in China sort of trends. So when I came here 7 years ago, those weren't really in place. The infrastructure in China had developed so much so that the railways, the high-speed railways were pretty impressive. The airlines had completely restructured their fleets. They completely restructured their services. There were hotels absolutely everywhere in every city. So you could see that Southeast Asia was really sort of waiting for this to sort of transfer into the region. But the other interesting thing about Southeast Asia is just how much people travel themselves within the region between different countries. And that's an interesting element because that has nothing to do with China.
Yeah.
So there are strong travel markets here. There are some overlaps in terms of cultures and cuisines, but there's a lot of differences between the countries of Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
So it really is interesting. And now we're starting to see perhaps more of an influence from India as well.
Mm.
So I really do think that what's happening in Southeast Asia is, you know, I think the world is watching because we're seeing the two biggest markets of the future, India and China, and they're interacting quite heavily in this region. But we also have big markets in Southeast Asia. Yeah. The Indonesian market is huge.
Right.
Malaysians travel all the time.
Yeah.
Singapore is a very strong market.
Yes.
So I think that's why the world is watching Southeast Asia. And I'm really glad I came here, because the way that things have been changing in the last sort of eight or nine years is very, very interesting.
Yeah. And so now you've traveled so much, are there still new places for you to go? Are you still as thrilled by travel as you were when you were, you know, backpacking around South America doing research for the Rough Guide?
Yeah, I absolutely. Yeah, I mean, travel was kind of instilled in my life. My mum was a travel agent, so from a young age, you know, that was all I ever wanted to do. As a kid, my mum's travel agency was very close to my school.
Yeah.
So after school, I used to go and sit in the back office and help them stamp these brochures and see these impossibly beautiful photos.
Yeah.
Beaches and hotels. So from that day, you know, I knew I always wanted to travel.
Mm.
And I'm a very happy traveler. I always love travel. Even if I go to places that, you know, other people say who don't go there or don't do that, you know, I always try to find something positive. Well, I remember when I was working in Central America, people would say, well, that's just too dangerous. You know, you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, parts of it were quite dangerous, but there's beautiful parts there, untapped places. You still meet incredible people. Try foods that you've never had before. But in terms of places that I haven't been to, there's two that really stand out for me.
Mm.
One is Russia, which I've never been to,
oh.
And one is Pakistan, which just looks absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm seeing more and more about Pakistan at the moment, actually.
Yeah, I think the Pakistan Tourism Board is really starting to express itself more strongly. And it just looks stunningly beautiful.
Right, it does, doesn't it? And so the final question then, Southeast Asia Travel Show, why start it now? What's the reasoning?
That's a good question. I'm going to ask you the same one in a few minutes. We've been talking about this for quite a while, and it's been in my mind probably for about a year. For some of the reasons that I've just said, there is so much happening here. There's so much happening within destinations. There's so much happening between destinations. Domestic travel is happening very, very fast as well. I just think there's a lot to discuss. There's a lot of issues out there that are important to people. We meet interesting people doing interesting things all the time in the travel sector.
Mm.
And I think a lot of that goes a little bit undocumented, but I don't think we'll do for long. I think, you know, the time has come for Southeast Asia right now. And we will be seeing over the next, I think, 4 or 5 years, it will become, you know, a real engine of the global travel industry. And that's great. So we can talk about it.
Good, yeah, and I'm excited about it. So, I've given you a little bit of a grilling now. I guess it's my turn.
Let's swap over.
Let's switch.
Let's take a break and I'll ask you some questions.
Mm.
So, Hannah, it's your turn in the hot seat.
Oh, don't be too mean.
Okay, the first question is, you grew up in the UK, you studied classics and French at Oxford.
Yes.
Where and when did travel begin to make an impact on your life and also your career?
I think in terms of my life, you know, I've always used to go on family holidays to France from when I was very little. And I used to learn French, you know, after school clubs. So I think the two are kind of inextricably linked, you know, learning languages and that want or wanderlust to go to other countries. So, of course, when you study a language at university, you have to go and live in that country, don't you, to really learn the language properly. So I had a year abroad in France, had a great time, came back, did my last year of uni and had that wanderlust again. I thought, oh, I don't want to settle down into a career just yet. I don't know what I want to do. I'll go and take another gap year. So I went off to China.
Yeah. And that was when?
That was 2007.
Yeah.
So you can maybe work out the difference between Gary and I's age from that. So I went off to China. I was living in Guangzhou, in southern China.
And how was that?
It was interesting. You know, it was, I mean, you've got your own experiences of China, but this was just before the Olympic Games. And Guangzhou, although it's a major city, I think it's one of the top tier cities.
Yeah.
But it was still quite unusual for people to see foreigners.
Yeah.
Even, you know, things like taking the metro, you'd be constantly photographed.
Yeah.
I had a friend who had very bright ginger hair and people would go up to her and tug her hair just to see if it was real. You know, they couldn't believe that somebody could have such like vibrant red hair. They thought it was a wig.
Right.
So it was a really intense experience. I was really lucky because our school gave us long weekends, so we didn't work Friday to Sunday, and it meant that every weekend, pretty much, we would go traveling to another part of China.
Yeah.
So we went all over, and that was fantastic. And came back to the UK because all good things have to come to an end. Took the Trans-Siberian through Russia. So
fantastic. Wow, very jealous.
Make you jealous. And then settled down, found a job there, working for a lock company.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a big company that owns brands like Yale, like HID, like door cards when you go in. It's nothing at all to do with travel, essentially. Nothing. All to do
with... No business trips?
Well, the odd business trip, you know, to a car factory in rural Prague, for example. Not the kind of travel that I was into. I mean, of course, you're still traveling on your holidays, but it wasn't quite the same thing. And I always knew that I wanted to try to get back into the travel industry.
Yeah.
And it so happened that my then boyfriend, now husband, his family, living in Malaysia, we'll probably talk about that in a minute, but he had family out here who had a travel agency. And we decided, you know what, let's take a gamble. Let's move out to Malaysia. To Kuala Lumpur, and
this was out for two years.
This was back in 2012.
Uh-huh.
So it's getting on for almost 8 years ago now.
Yeah.
And we decided, yeah, let's come out to Malaysia. And since then, you know, we've been there ever since, really.
Mm-hmm.
Always in the travel line. So I've been doing different things. So working for a travel agency, and this is a very traditional travel agency. I've run my own travel startup, worked for a travel technology company, and now running my own travel consulting business. So all sorts of different sides of the travel industry, but it's such a fantastic industry. You know, I think you can agree, you meet so many interesting, fascinating people who've got different viewpoints to you, and it's...
And you get to travel a lot as well around the region. And you get to travel,
right, exactly. So that is... definitely a perk.
So as you mentioned there, you've got family connections to Malaysia. Has that given you a different set of insights into the challenges, the opportunities, both of working and traveling in Southeast Asia?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's meant that I haven't fallen into a kind of expat trap, in a way. I don't know, you know, sometimes it's very easy to come and live in a foreign country, but only kind of hang out, work with other expatriates, and that gives you, I think, a different perspective to the country that you're living in.
Yeah.
Whereas I think, and I mean, you're the same now, you're also married to a Malaysian, right? Yeah. That you have that kind of first-hand experience from your family, from their friends, about what life is really like as a Malaysian living here. You know, how do politics directly affect you? How do the economy affect you? Down to, you know, what are they really thinking about when they're traveling holiday? What are those kind of...
And what would you say, having been here for nearly 8 years, what changes have you seen in the travel sector, the travel industry in Malaysia? How is it changing?
I mean, I think the biggest change is more and more travellers are going as FITs, so they're travelling by themselves, not necessarily travelling with a travel agent, you know, and also travelling to more exotic destinations too.
Right.
I think Malaysians in general are getting a bit braver.
Yeah.
And they are happier to kind of DIY it
rather
than feel like, oh, I need a travel agency to do everything for me.
And do you think the travel industry from around the world is tapping into that? Do you think they're aware of this sort of, this broader appeal of traveling wider and further and into different destinations? Or is it still slowly developing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's slowly developing, you know. I think some tourism boards, like Australia or New Zealand, they're very aware of Malaysians being these kind of free, independent travellers, love to do self-drive. You know, I was talking to a director of New Zealand for APAC, and he was saying, yeah, one of the biggest things that Malaysians do when they visit New Zealand is they do self-drive holidays.
Right.
They're one of the biggest ones up there. But there's still so much more to be done. And I think we can both agree a lot of tourism boards see Malaysia and Southeast Asia as well as just this tiny, insignificant region and don't necessarily focus on the positives that they have, which is, you know, it's quite an affluent place for a lot of travellers, tend to be middle class, tend to have quite a good level of English and tend to want to travel everywhere as well. And I think, yeah, there's still a lot more to be done for tourism boards to kind of attract those.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's something we'll be talking about over the coming months.
Mm.
So you established your own business here in Kuala Lumpur, Per Anderson, which is a travel consulting business. And what were your objectives and your motivations for going it alone?
So, I mean, I think my primary motivation was that I wanted to be my own boss again.
Right.
So I'd run a travel startup for a little while. I'd run that with my husband. We got acquired by another travel technology company. And that was fun. You know, you're working with a bigger company, but at the same time, you really miss that freedom of being able to make your own decisions, decide when you want to go on holiday, decide your own timetable, decide what kind of clients you want to work with.
Yeah.
And so that was really one of my drivers. And, you know, of course, there are challenges as well about going it alone, and that you have to constantly self-motivate yourself too.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to get up in the morning and say, right, I am going to do some work.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to sit around in my pajamas all day
watching
Netflix.
Yeah. Did it help? But, I mean, you are quite close to the travel sector generally. You've got good contacts. You know, you go to a lot of travel events. And did that is that helped with your motivation that, you know, you have to be out there? It is an industry where you have to network. You have to be on your game the whole time.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. And actually, that's one of the elements that I really love is the people element. Yeah. So a lot of what I spend my day doing is going out and meeting travel agencies. And through that, you learn also, I mean, you can have a lovely chit-chat with them about this, that, and the other, but you also learn a lot about insights, about what's going on in the industry, what their challenges are, what the new trends are. And you wouldn't necessarily get that, I think, from just sitting behind your desk.
Yeah.
So there is always that element of person-to-person contact
that
I think, you know, really gives you an energy to get through the day.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think one of the other things that we benefit as well is that the Kuala Lumpur really has developed into a hub. It's not just people traveling in and out. There's a lot of transit here. It really has become a real part of the region's travel industry. And that's interesting because that brings more opportunities, but brings more challenges as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'll ask you the same question you asked me a few moments ago. Why set up the Southeast Asia Travel Show now, and what are your hopes for it?
So really, I guess my hope is that people start to recognize Southeast Asia as a region that is worth having attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that too long people have been giving massive amounts of attention to China, to India, but, you know, Southeast Asia is this little region, and actually not so little, huge population in some countries like Indonesia, and it's only going to get bigger, and it's only going to get more exciting, and what I really hope is to convince people during this podcast that actually, you know, this region is growing, it's going somewhere, and you've got to get in now and understand the trends now, and you're going to be ahead of the time later on.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I mean, one of the things I talked about is how a lot of the sort of some of the macro trends have sort of suffused down from China and perhaps a bit from India, but we are seeing a lot of entrepreneurial activity in the travel industry here in Southeast Asia, particularly with the airlines, some of the hotel companies, the travel and tour operators. That there's a lot of dynamism here, and there are big populations, as you say.
Yeah.
Some of the economies are growing quite fast, particularly, I think I was watching earlier TV, and Vietnam next year is predicted to grow very, very fast.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of change here. I think one of the interesting things that we've talked about this that we can try and develop with the show is just to find some of these little corners of interest that are happening, because there are 10 countries in our region that we're talking about.
Exactly. It's not one.
And
kind
some
of
are small, and some are large,
yeah.
And there's so much different dynamic.
Yeah,
that's happening here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's one of the things that I love, you know, when I travel around and I look after Southeast Asia for some companies, and the differences in the way people do business and the way they approach business is just so kind of intriguing. You know, people think, again, of Southeast Asia as just one lump.
Yeah.
But like you say, it's actually made up of lots of different cultures, lots of different approaches, ways of doing business, languages, cultures, all kind of melded together.
Yeah. And two of the largest countries in the region, archipelagos, that often gets overlooked.
Yes.
You know, we have the mainland, we have the Philippines and Indonesia, which
exactly.
are thousands of islands, each one.
Yeah. And exactly, and I mean, if you take that in the context, you know, a lot of things that are in the news now about over-tourism and flight shame and everything else. But if you're living in the Philippines, if you're living in Indonesia and you want to visit one of these other islands, there's no way you're going to take a ferry to it that's going to take weeks and weeks. The only way to get there is flying. It's just interesting to see how these kind of narratives in tourism in the West, also, how do they play out in Southeast Asia?
Yeah, and I think that plays back to one of the things we mentioned earlier, is just how important in this region domestic tourism is going to become. Because so many people are having more opportunities to travel and actually explore their own countries. And some of them, as we mentioned, are very, very large. Some aren't, but there are more opportunities now. From Kuala Lumpur, we can fly to cities around and towns around Malaysia that we couldn't do before. And you can fly several times a day. Those opportunities are really going to change people's lives. And it also means that travel and lifestyle become more entwined and become more integrated into particularly the lives of urban people across the region.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you see, you know, Nielsen does a consumer confidence survey, I think, every quarter. One of the things that I think Southeast Asians always consistently say that they are not going to cut back on spend is on holidays. You know, they consider it an essential part of their lifestyle.
And long may it continue, because it'll give us more to talk about.
Yes, exactly.
Hannah, thank you very much for that. So as we said, this is our new travel show, the Southeast Asia Travel Show, which we will be producing regularly from January 2020. We're going to do another pilot show next week, which we will launch, and we'll put that out. It'll be a bit of a look back at what's happened in 2019.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's our aim. Hannah, is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap up this first show?
Well, I mean, you can find us on Facebook, which is at the SEA Travel Show. You can also follow us on Twitter, which is at SEA Travel Show. And we're going to have an Instagram coming up soon, maybe
new
even
website.
A LinkedIn, snazzy new website. So it's all go, go, go for us in the run up to Christmas.
Gives us something to do.
Exactly. So watch out for our next episode. And
Great. Thank you very much, Hannah.
Travel.
And see you all soon.
Bye.